It is 7:09 in the morning. You're listening to Upfront. I'm Brian Edwards-Tiegert. Antonio Juhas is out today and tomorrow. Mitch Jeserich is with me in KPFA studios. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Brian. Good morning, everybody.
How was your weekend?
It was okay. It was better than the week. I always prefer the weekend than the week. I guess a weekend is kind of like pizza. Even when it's bad, it's okay.
And makes you a little bit heavier.
Well, no. I try to exercise on the weekend.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Good. Thanks for asking.
Where do you want to start? Costa Hawkins' repeal just qualified for the California ballot. I just learned that from Eileen Alfandari's headlines. This seems like big news. Should we go through what that is?
I think so.
Okay, so California has a law in the books that prevents cities and counties from enacting most meaningful types of rent control. And the long backstory on this is that after Proposition 13 passed, ballot initiative that prevented property taxes from rising, suddenly the push to create rent control in gentrifying cities like San Francisco gained a lot of steam because the landlords had rent control on their taxes, and this seemed very unfair to tenants groups. So Costa Hawkins was like the next shoe dropping, saying no to those cities. And it did three really important things. It prevented cities from controlling rents on single family homes. It capped the year after which you could control the rents on housing. Caps it at 1995, unless, like San Francisco or Berkeley or Santa Monica, you had already had rent control in place. Then it capped it at the year in which you enacted rent control, which might be many years earlier than 1995. So anything built after that point couldn't be controlled. And the third one, and this has not made the headlines as much, is that it bars what's called vacancy control. So right now, a rent control jurisdiction can tell a landlord, you cannot raise the rent more than X percent per year on a tenant while they're living there. But as soon as they move out and you start a new tenancy, you can raise the rent to market rate. Now, obviously, there's a couple problems with this. One is it creates a very powerful incentive to evict tenants, even pretextually. So you see rent control jurisdictions like San Francisco scrambling to come up with eviction protections and then resources to enforce the eviction protections, like the right to counsel they just came up with. But the bigger issue is it means there's this steady attrition in the amount of housing stock that is made affordable through rent control, once you have a sustained period of high rents. Now, the interesting thing about Costa Hawkins' repeal qualifying for the ballot is that many cities that had aggressive rent control ordinances on the books before Costa Hawkins passed still have them on the books. It is just preempted. Berkeley Side was reporting on what this means for the city of Berkeley recently. Right now, the rent board in Berkeley is scrambling to figure out what to put in place so there's not utter chaos should their law come back into effect and immediately roll rents back to what they were in 1980, the year Berkeley's rent control ordinance passed, the minimum allowable adjustment.
That'd be pretty awesome.
Be pretty awesome for the people living in those units.
Yes.
It could put a lot of landlords into bankruptcy.
Yeah, okay.
Which, yeah, you know, tiny violins, right?
Well, I'm sure there would be some negative consequence to that as well. But nonetheless, I mean, just having rent go back to 1980 level. Of course, I'm not even talking about paying the rent
of 1980s.
But I'm just saying, yeah, precisely. Having it be as much of, say, one person's income as it used to be would be awesome. That's all I'm saying. As a renter.
Yeah.
Who fears for his future in the Bay Area.
Well, it's going to be really interesting also to see what the balance of power in state politics is between tenants groups and landlord associations. Obviously, the latter have a lot of money to spend. But housing affordability is a statewide crisis now. In a way, it hasn't been before. It's really spilled out of the coastal enclaves.
Has this ever been voted on before? Is this the first time it's...
Not to my knowledge. I don't think tenants groups ever thought it was remotely achievable at the ballot box before.
Why?
Well, there's only a few places that ever had rent control. San Francisco, Oakland, Berkeley, right. Santa Monica. And so the idea of explaining like why this would matter, you know, to voters in Sacramento and Fresno and Eureka and Riverside, you know, that just seemed like a lot of work. For a long time, tenants organizations were focused on getting more rent control ordinances passed in other cities around the state. But at a certain point, if the state policy framework only lets you lock in the rents you already have, once you're into a full-blown housing affordability crisis, that doesn't feel like much relief. If you already can't make the rent, yeah, you're glad it won't go up unexpectedly, but it's still not fixing your problem.
Right. So this dynamic of when you have rent control, you can't raise the rent beyond a certain small percentage point, usually in most places, but not all, that why the current tenant is living there. But then when the tenant moves out, the landlord can then move it to market rate, which, of course, as you indicated, creates this dynamic of the landowners trying to get rid of the tenant so that they could raise the rent. Has there ever been a law that has said that even when a tenant leaves, you can only raise the rent so much for a new tenant?
Yes, that's how Berkeley's rent control worked before mm-hmm. Costa Hawkins passed. A small portion of New York City's housing stock is still controlled, vacancy controlled. Under a system like that. At various points in history, there have been rent control regimes like that. A lot of cities created that. It's called vacancy control during World War II, when there were housing shortages, basically in industrial boom towns like San Francisco and the Bay Area. So
not unprecedented then.
Economists don't like it. They particularly don't like it if it applies to newly constructed housing because they think it creates a disincentive to build the housing because it caps the potential future returns, which is why almost every one of these laws says, you know, everything built before this year. And presumably a city would keep updating the year. Do you know what I mean? But it would not apply to new construction. But there you have it.
Have you seen any polling?
I have not.
On something like this?
I have not.
May not be out there yet.
No. Yeah. But I'm sure the people who put it on the ballot have and think they have a fighting chance.
Well, I'm sure there'll be a lot of money both sides on this.
The question is how many negative messages do they test?
Yeah. Here we go.
Could be a lot of turnout just because of Donald Trump in the midterm elections.
Well, I'm sure there will be.
So it's not going to look like a typical midterm electorate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of which, Washington, D.C., what does the week ahead in immigration look like?
Well, there's actually a big question mark on it. The House of Representatives is scheduled to debate and probably vote on two bills concerning immigration. I say probably because they actually haven't fixed a date yet for an actual vote, which means things are still in a little bit of limbo in the House of Representatives. It's largely talked about that they're taking up the issue this week, which they are. Tomorrow, House Republicans are going to the White House to meet with Donald Trump. But the fact that they haven't picked a date yet for a vote is indicative of things aren't quite settled on how the House leadership wants to move forward on this. Now, there are two bills that they are going to consider. And of course, a lot of this is in response to the outrage that is now publicly being expressed by just about everyone concerning the separation of families after people are arrested and charged with a crime for coming in and coming across the border. The two bills.
And when we say everyone.
Yeah.
Can I just say?
Yeah.
Former First Lady Laura Bush.
Yeah.
Current First Lady Melania Trump.
Mm-hmm.
The Church of Attorney General Jeff Sessions.
Well, even Donald Trump.
outraged
by what he says Democrats are forcing him to do is what that's their take on that. So there are two bills that are supposed to be considered this week. The first one that I want to talk about is by Bob Goodlatte, who is the chair of the House Judiciary Committee. And his bill, which is considered the most extreme bill, which is ironic in itself, because this is the chair of the House Judiciary Committee. This is the guy that has all the resources of this committee, who if you think you're going to come up with a measure that would be reasonable, that people are going to vote on because it was going to make good public policy, you'd think it would actually come from the chair of a committee who has a specialty in that issue. Instead, this is considered the most extreme bill that of the two that they will be considering. Anyways, what his bill would do is it would undo what they like to call the visa diversity program, which ensured that you have people from around the country that would get visas to come to the United States, not just from Europe as it was in the past. It would also dramatically restrict family reunification. It wouldn't eliminate it, but it would greatly decrease it about who would qualify to be able to come over as family. It would spend a lot of money on border, quote unquote, security. Others would call it militarization. It would build Donald Trump's put $25 billion towards building a wall on the border for Donald Trump. And when it comes to Dreamers, it would protect them from being deported for 3 years. It would never give them the opportunity to get citizenship, and they would have to renew their visa once every 3 years with restrictions. And say, for example, if a Dreamer were suddenly unable to make 125% of the federal poverty level of for income, then they would no longer qualify for that visa.
Whoa.
Now, that's the extreme bill, the Bob Goodlatte bill. Probably not going to pass.
Uh-huh.
The so-called compromise bill does almost the exact same thing that the extreme bill does, except for when it comes to Dreamers. Everything else I laid out there, this so-called compromise bill. When we say compromise bill, we used to say compromise bill, meaning that there were Democrats and Republicans on board. But now compromise bill is actually just a compromise amongst Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And so the bill that they would probably that would may have a chance of passing, but we could talk about that. That's not so clear either. Would do everything that the Bob Goodlatte bill would do, except it would allow for a path to citizenship for the Dreamers.
Okay. And so the leverage in all this is that the Trump administration unilaterally decided to apply the law in such a way that it created what almost everybody inside and outside the country acknowledges is a humanitarian crisis of separating parents from their children, some of whom, because of bureaucratic fumbling, may never see them again.
Yeah. Basically,
when you put the bills on the table that way, it makes
this,
it sound...
This is... Look, the bills that they're going to take up, this is nothing new. This is nothing that they haven't already previously not been able to get through the House of Representatives. These are sort of mirrors of what have already occurred. With minor changes, the so-called compromise bill says that you should not separate children from their parents when they are detained. That said, what it could also mean is that then children will just go and be detained with their parents, be in jail with their parents, mm-hmm. would be the alternative of that. So a lot hasn't changed. What has changed, as you indicated, is just this public outcry, which is good. I mean, it's good that we have outcries over these things. I don't remember reading about such outcry over the Chinese Exclusion Act and many of other things in our history when it comes to immigration. So it's positive that there is this huge outcry over these type of practices. But basically, what they're doing with this so-called compromise bill on immigration is we're still bringing the same extreme measures that we've tried to bring before. And this time we're holding these children, these small children, as hostage and daring Democrats to vote against it. I'd like to say this is a new tactic, but it's not. This is exactly what happened with the Dreamers. Everybody was outraged over what was going to happen to these young people who came here as children, grew up here, and are basically are Americans, right? And there was this huge outcry, and we talked about it here. Oh, they're, you know, Donald Trump, the Republicans are using these Dreamers as hostage. And now they've moved to smaller children that are being separated from their parents this time. And I think that's a really scary development, right? Because it's just continually pushing the envelope of what is acceptable. And there is this outrage right now, but soon enough, there have been outrage this entire presidency. And soon enough, when does it become normalized until you move on to something else? I mean, to me, it's just this danger of, and I know there's a fallacy of the slippery slope, but there is this danger that I think we should be concerned of about how cruel we're really allowing things to become.
Yeah. Well, it's also really hard to imagine Democrats in the House or the Senate biting at a compromise, quote unquote compromise, that was made without their input, without really addressing any of their issues beyond crises that the Trump administration itself created and could itself fix without congressional action. Like, what possible incentives would they have to cede ground on these issues?
It's the children.
Yeah.
Right?
But that didn't happen with the Dreamers, to your point.
Right. So let's go a little more extreme. Mm-hmm. You know, let's just keep pushing the envelope on what we could see we can get them, to cry uncle, so to say.
I mean, this goes back to a point we made a couple weeks ago talking about whether or not the Trump administration would ever sign off on an immigration reform. I think there are increasingly strong indicators that whatever is in front of Congress, the Trump administration will find a way to be against. Certainly anything that has the word compromise, no matter how stretched and contorted that term has to become to apply to the underlying bill, it's not about what he gets or even what he says he wants. It's about like an oppositional identity and an anti-immigrant identity and brand that he projects in politics.
Well, he was originally asked about both of these bills, and his first comment was, I won't support either of them. And then the Republicans in the House were like, what are you talking about? You know? And then the White House came out with a statement later on saying he would sign both of them, whichever one came to his desk, the Goodlatte bill or the compromise bill.
So at what point do the Republicans who have genuine moral qualms about permanently traumatizing young children, or who are getting earfuls from their spouses and their churches and former Republicans and elder statesmen of their party, at what point do they actually peel off and deal with Democrats in some kind of compromise resolution?
Well, I have always said, and I think this is to the point that you just said, that I believe this is for Trump about him getting the money to build his own version of the wall on the border.
But the money's in both these bills.
Right. And he'll probably sign, the White House says he'll sign them. So he said originally in an interview that he would veto both of them. And then the White House said, well, he misunderstood the question. It indicated that he would sign either one that would come to his desk. Maybe he won't. But that's the White House position right now. And again, they're meeting with him tomorrow night at the White House. So we'll have probably more clarity on that. Paul Ryan has said that he would never move a bill unless the president had already agreed to support it. Doesn't mean he has to stick to that, right? There could be enough pressure on him of like, hey, you got to move on something. You got to put pressure on him, not just keep it, in the dark.
Or he could be outflanked by one of these discharge petitions.
Right. And that's also what has been happening. This right now, Jeff Denham, the Republican from the outskirts of the Bay Area, who brought this discharge petition, was never actually able to get the 218 signatures. He came a little bit close. I think the House leadership was working very hard to keep him from getting those votes, and probably some wheeling and dealing behind closed doors that kept Denham from actually getting that.
And probably promising the vote on some kind of compromise legislation was part of what it took to keep those votes in line.
I think so. And if Jeff Denham's discharge petition would have went through, and he wasn't the only one who was sponsoring it, but his local person who was, then it would have opened up the door to vote on four separate bills, which could have been a bill that maybe the Democrats would have supported, maybe just the Straight Dreamers Act. And if you get a few Republicans to cross over, that could have passed. And I don't think they wanted that situation.
In which case, it's still subject to a presidential veto. So are they afraid about policy they don't like getting made, or just having to vote yes or no on clearly defined moral issues that would put them in an embarrassing position?
Well, there is a core of Trump supporters who think that any type of path of legalization for even the Dreamers is amnesty. The president has said that he is open to protect and would like to protect Dreamers as well. So it's not necessarily like he's following their talking points in this whole situation. We're talking about immigration reform, but it's really only a partial immigration reform, because if we're talking about Dreamers and if we're talking about these children who are taken away from their families at the border, we're not talking about the vast majority of undocumented immigrants in this country, right? And so, the House has already, this isn't a new proposal in the House, but the House hasn't moved on it because it didn't have the president's support. So now, if the president greenlights it tomorrow after their meeting, then I'm sure we'll see them vote later on this week. I would imagine they will not have all Republicans on board to vote for this, who do or much more aligned with these people that say even a path to citizenship for Dreamers is amnesty, as though amnesty is this terrible thing. And so you're going to need some Democrats to come on board. And that's where this whole issue comes to a head of, are Democrats willing to vote against, enough Democrats willing to vote against this bill to kill it, because and perhaps suffer the consequence of looking like you're voting against a measure and giving Donald Trump a talking point of that, again, this is as much Democrats' fault as it is Republicans' fault. They have this issue at the border.
Oh. Well, that
you know,
takes
but I think it's, you know, I do think it's also worth to mention just quickly when we're so concerned, and we should be concerned, this is an outrage what's happening on the border of separating parents from children. But this happens internally in the United States far before the Trump administration, during the Obama administration, during the George W. Bush administration, of when children who are citizens and their parents are undocumented immigrants are taken away. They're separated too from their parents. I mean, I'm not saying it's on par. I mean, hopefully they have family members or someone they can stay with. But you know, this issue of separating children from their parents is not necessarily a new one. This one at the border, when you arrest a parent, is, and is clearly by the Trump administration as a deterrent. But this whole dynamic of separating parents from their children internally has been going on for a long time.